Today's sponsor is Sonos. Sonos is offering the listeners of Watching Dead 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. This offer is available for a limited time only and cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. Use the promo code WATCHING10, that's capital WATCHING10, at Sonos.com to receive this offer. The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're here today to do the Season 8A wrap-up, the first half of Season 8. First half of All Out War, because it looks like they're extending it. All Out War has been such a success that people have decided we need a double dose of it. I almost asked you what you thought of the episode, but thank God we're out of this season. I do not have a lot to say about this truly awful season or half season of television. I as soon as our final podcast on the premiere aired, I jettisoned all care from my brain for this show. So what I do have is a lot of people in the feedback section who want to talk about the show and where things could be going, and I guess I will indulge them in their folly. That's the word.
Yeah, that's a $20 word we're folly? Using to describe stuff fandom events around The Walking Dead. I guess I don't. I have more because I remember on the last podcast I said I got some spoiler thoughts on this, but then I thought it's like I'm just going to be mourning the loss of a storyline that can never happen. And why would I be excited about the preservation of said storyline? Because they've literally fucked up every big comic moment that I can remember in the last 5 years.
Every single one.
And I've tried reading the comics with anticipation right before a season starts. And I tried not reading the comics because, like, well, maybe the memory is just too sharp and the execution was too good. And nothing helps because they're doing a bad job. Of making this television. And again, if you're happy with it, if you like it, I don't begrudge you your happiness and success at all. But if you look up around the fandom, you might notice that 90% of your former comrades are gone. And it's because you are, in fact, watching a bad television show that you happen to enjoy. That's fine. I watch many bad television shows that I enjoy.
The thing is, I don't know that we even have to make that statement because I think we've, at this point, self-selected the audience enough to where people who are watching it, or maybe not even watching it, but listening to our podcast, as I know there are a lot of people who do that, they're not watching this show because they love it anymore. They're kind of like watching through their fingers as this car wreck, this train wreck happens.
Yeah. I just feel like that, especially next year, I think there's going to be even a more precipitous drop because...
Yeah.
You know, if you're a fan of the storyline, they say they've been spooning that they've been spooling out for you. Then, like, it's so funny because I listened to Jason and Karen's podcast, and Jason's is still enjoying the show, and he still cares about the characters, but he's like, you know, on the one hand, you know, killing off Carl is exciting because like literally anything can happen, but then you know, even Jason's like, but on the other hand. I thought the whole show was supposed to be about him and the passing the torch and like, right. And he's like, you know, bummed that he doesn't see any possible way they can tell those rich storylines. Like for the first time, not only are they going to not try and do a half-assed job, but they're not even going to attempt it. And if it is like, if they do give all of the plots that Carl is supposed to have to Enid, that's just the worst remix of all time.
Because the relationship is not there.
Like, it's not important. As soon as Rick got to Alexandria, he adopted Enid as his daughter. No, they built up this whole other thing. Like, there's no way. I mean, it could be they remix it to Maggie passing the torch to Enid, but do people really care about Enid? Like, I've only cared about Enid in so much as that she's an interesting foil for Carl.
And it removes the inherent... you know, father-son or mother-daughter relationship there. Like, Enid is not Maggie's flesh and blood.
No.
And that is, say what you want about it, you know, important. It is important in people's lives, and it's significant, and it's not something you can just artificially create.
No, and I don't want to act like I'm shitting.
There are certainly relationships,
right,
where that may be thicker than blood, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to mistakenly shit on adopted families either. But
sure.
if you have a meaningful experience with your adopted family, it's probably because you've spent years getting to know each other and building that framework of trust and love.
Uh-huh.
Precisely in the way the show has not between any other characters except for Carl and Rick.
Absolutely.
It's just like, if, again, I don't, and you know, there's a lot of debate in the fandom whether this is just them lurching, you know, for new ideas and new plot, or if this is a vindictive fuck you to Chandler Riggs and his potentially weird family of potentially, like, that's another ugly rumor thing I've seen. Oh, this, you know, Chandler Riggs' dad and mom are... You know, it's kind of gross and creepy the way they're involved in his career, but, like, I don't know.
Either way, it's dumb.
Yeah.
Because it, like, no matter why you're doing it, the things that it's doing to the story are just completely counterproductive.
Yeah. It's pretty tough.
All right. Well, maybe we don't want
2 hours more of this. Let's see what the audience has to say.
We might get another hour of it with the audience. Let's see. Let's get to feedback. We start off with Scott. He says, "So I've been slowly watching The Walking Dead die since season 5. My attitude toward the show went from, wow, what a great season, shame about that bad episode, to, well, at least 12 of the 16 were good, to, well, shit, that's a 50-50 split of good and bad. And then the first half of season 8 happened. I wasn't excited for the season at all, but I needed to see All Out War unfold because I was certain that they couldn't fuck it up." You sound, Scott, exactly like we sounded
right
at the beginning of this season.
Yep.
From right down to your arc, your feeling arc, all the way to surely they can't fuck up.
And
this,
to their credit,
arc.
They have slow boiled the frog.
Yeah,
between season 3 to season 8, it is
but
stunning
they've
how they just
like half the frog. Like half the frog has left. The legs hopped out, and
yeah,
the
half
the
frog's
head
like
and
this ain't slow boiling enough for me. I can
right.
definitely feel the boil. I'm out. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's gone from like it's not like we went from season 4 of Breaking Bad to season 7 of The Walking Dead. It's been
right.
a slow incremental. You know, they keep on adding one parts rat shit to 9 parts pig meat, and they keep on adding, like, now we bypass a 50-50 rat shit pig meat, and now we're mostly eating a rat shit sausage.
Yeah, and we know, but we do know.
Yeah.
We taste the rat shit.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a mystery. Like, how did this rat shit get in here? Well...
So, talking about All Out War, he says the arc in the comic was so simple and action-packed that it would translate easily to TV. The episodes were pretty bad, save for one, and I thought, this sucks, but I'll give the mid-season finale a go just to see All Out War conclude. And then last week, it was obvious that if they were going to wrap up All Out War in Episode 8 would be a huge rush, and then it didn't happen at all. With previous seasons dwindling in quality, Season 8 was a perfect opportunity to give us a brilliant first half season wrap up by episode 8, then time jump in episode 9, which could have revitalized the show. Instead, they've done the impossible and prolonged All Out War to at least 9 episodes. 8 was pushing as it was.
It's going
to
be full 16.
Yeah, don't kid yourself.
Yeah,
you're not getting one more episode.
Let's not do this.
Carl's not going to die and then All Out War is over.
Right.
They've still got All Out War
that
needs to happen.
Because that's the thing, like... Even doing a half-assed, it's going to take a while to get from Rick being like, you killed my son, to... You know, my mercy overcomes my wrath. Like, it's...
Yeah. He says he's going to be back in February, purely to see All Out War come to a close, but because he needs that closure. But once that's finished, so am I. He also says, but I'm out as long as Gimple or AMC is in. Well, I think you're out then, because AMC is going to be in this no matter what.
Yeah. I don't know that you're going to get closure, man. Like,
no.
It's one of those things where...
They don't want anybody to have closure.
Like
they want to keep you on the rope.
If you let a crazy person into your life, and maybe sometimes you're born into it because it's your father or mother or your brother or sister, or it's a girlfriend or a boyfriend or just a friend, and they become like a toxic influence in your life, a lot of times you pass that point of like diminishing returns and sunk costs because, you know, you want them to, like, you want to have that fucking movie moment where you tell them your authentic feelings and they validate those and say, you're fucking right, I'm going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
But with garbage people, you never get that. You just keep funneling concern and arguments and emotion into it, and you get nothing in return.
Yeah, and that is this show.
Yeah, that's what I feel like we are. I mean, not enabling, because that's the AMCs of the world, but we are certainly allowing ourselves to be abused by trying to seek closure where none can be found. Like, that's the thing, like, if Scott Gimple, like, you know, there was hope in season four, because Scott Gimple, you know, he's an upjumped writer, and you know, he's had shown some flashes of brilliance and some passion for the show. Like, maybe he just needs time on the job to learn. But in season eight, Darabont's not coming through that door.
No,
abandon all hope. Why? It's like, yeah, this. It's Christmas time. Just lose all human charity and fellow feeling.
Yeah,
and
you have till February to do that. You're okay to hold on to it for this month, then get rid of it.
Go strictly non-contact. You gotta clear The Walking Dead from your Netflix queue.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta delete them from your Amazon library. You got to block them on Twitter. It's the only way you can get healthy by February.
Don't do what Diogo is about to tell you what he's doing. He says, I just decided that going forward, my only contact with The Walking Dead will be your coverage. I'm no longer watching it. Well, that doesn't help. You're still, there's still the potential to suck you back in. What if they have a good episode and we get on the podcast and we say, you know, that was actually a good episode.
Right.
It's been sucking, but that was a good episode. You're going to be right back on it. I know you will.
And that's the thing, like, I just don't think that, it's all... The fear that they're going to right the ship, and the fear of missing out, the dreaded FOMO.
Uh-huh.
It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Is there an exciting announcement about new... Is Guy Ferrari walking through that door?
No.
Is there, like, a new casting shakeup? Is there, like, did the vice president of programming get fired at AMC? Well, you're not going to... No, it's... They're not even beginning to correct course.
No.
They're still looking for icebergs to ram into.
Yeah, they're riding the ship.
I'm just trying to come up with a more inventive, disaster-loaded language to use. This is what's keeping me engaged in the podcast. I'm just trying to think of the next Titanic imagery I can... the next rat shit imagery I can glom onto.
Awesome. Well, maybe you can come up with one for the ratings of The Walking Dead. He Diogo wants to compare it to X-Files, which is the kind of the gold standard, he says, of shows that went to shit.
Right.
So here's the mid-season finale ratings for The Walking Dead. He says the peak, season 5 mid-season finale, at 14.81 million viewers. Now, that's not actually the highest it ever hit, but this is kind of an arc he's establishing here.
These are the numbers he's massaged to make his point. We understand.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Season 6 mid-season finale... 13.98 million. Season 7, 10.58. Season 8, 7.89. So it's like roughly 50% drop off.
Uh huh.
46.7 since season 5. For The X Files, the peak season finale was season 4 at 19.85 million viewers. Holy shit, that's a lot.
That surprises me that it happened, because I would have thought it would have happened like in between around the movie, which I think is between 5 and 6.
Huh, okay. Yeah, I thought it would have happened when the regulars started not becoming regulars anymore.
Well, that happened. Like, I think Mulder tapped out in 7, and I think Scully hung around until 8 or 9. So, yeah, lots, very far to fall.
He says the lowest season finale after that was the series finale at 13.25 million. So, only a loss of 33.2%. So, when you look at that precipitous decline of the ultimate, like, gold standard for... shows that went to shit.
Wow. I'm actually
The Walking Dead has actually surpassed it in that regard.
Yeah, I'm actually shocked, because I would have thought that the X-Files would have really limped in a shell of its former self.
Yeah. Yeah, that show in my mind is, like he said, the gold standard for just crap in the bed.
Yeah. I didn't make it past when Mulder went disappearing.
Right.
So if it got, well, if it got, that's the thing. It's like I always try to at least grant that maybe I'm missing something. But like conventional wisdom is not that the X-Files got good as soon as David Duchovny left.
I've never seen that
anti common sense 40,000 word Tumblr post.
Right.
Making the argument that the X-Files really flew once they got Mulder out of there and they got the T-1000 in.
Yeah, I was just shocked to see those numbers too.
Yeah.
And how big of a show X-Files was when it was on?
Maybe Lost was the last network, yeah, where everyone is still watching the same shit.
Yep. All right, we go to Clifton, who says, putting aside the inexcusable finale, I actually quite enjoyed this week's installment of Red Machete. It was, at the very least, good for a few yucks out of me. I know you guys didn't seem to care for the others, but this one seemed to stand on its own.
So I
wonder what you guys thought. We also have a question about, like, what the hell? Can we explain what the Red Machete stuff is? And I really, they're so dubiously connected that, no, I really can't. It's a series of vignettes that, like, follows this Red Machete in the loosest of terms.
And the last one we saw was the Red Machete was embedded within a zombie for...
long time.
Years.
Yeah.
And that's
potentially decades.
Right. We're still really watching the commercial to see how it ends. But yeah, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. It's this, that's the Walking Dead in a microcosm, right? This pretentious, mm-hmm. arty, student film thesis kind of bullshit that is not as clever and satisfying as the student imagines it to be.
And I think in a show that's better with an audience that's more willing to engage with that maybe they could have done something interesting with that basic idea.
Right.
Like, we're going to follow an element of the show as it kind of traverses the whole show.
Right.
You know? But they...
I guarantee whoever directed the Red Machete episodes will be directing a spotlight episode of The Walking Dead next season.
I wonder if that's on IMDb.
I'm sure you can find that.
All right. Let's move on to Mick from Bristol. Not wishing to defend The Walking Dead, but he wanted to talk about Carl's dodgy handwriting. He thought it was quite clever of the show to draw attention to this. After all, he wouldn't have had any proper schooling past the age of 10. Talking of bad writing, how has Scott Gimple gone from writing the two great episodes, which really got me into The Walking Dead, save the last one and pretty much dead already? That's for people who don't remember, which includes myself, where Shane shoots Otis to escape the walkers, and also the barn massacre, which... I think was the season finale for two, or no? That's the reveal of Sophia.
Right. Does that immediately trigger all the gunfire, immediately brings the herd to the farm?
Because
I wasn't
so.
Sure if it's the penultimate or the season finale, but whatever.
So it went from that. He has gone from that to presiding over this car crash. How much difference do you think it makes that those episodes were directed by experienced good directors? In Phil Abraham and Michelle McLaren.
Well, I mean, it's not just that. It's just being a showrunner is a fundamentally different job than being a staff writer.
Yeah, absolutely.
It'd be like...
It seems like you have less direct input, honestly. Like,
yeah.
You're more delegating the writing to others.
It's your job to have the clear vision and commitment to quality and success.
Right.
And you have to, like, that is what holds kind of the show together and keeps it, like... a universal kind of look and feel. And I feel like that. And also there's just a lot of like accounting nuts and bolts and making sure the budgets come on time and managing employees and relationships and all that stuff. And just because you're good at the one thing doesn't mean you're all that good at the other. And yes, like I think you can have a good director make a subpar script shine, especially if you got decent actors, which has never been The Walking Dead's problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have a very good script, you know, make it easy on the director by having, you know, very powerful speeches and clear motives and directions and stuff like that. But man, when you're putting amateur level effort on the both ends, there's not a performer alive that can save it.
Right.
So.
And I don't even know if I feel like a director given a truly awful script and not enough latitude can save a bad episode.
That's true. That's true.
I just think the writing was better in earlier seasons.
Well, I mean, it's probably... probably because they also were so close to the comic plot that
right.
a lot of that stuff just came free. Like, there is some genuine moments of gripping drama in The Walking Dead, and when The Walking Dead has the patience and foresight to just kind of tell those things, then it works. Also, like, you know, the other conventional wisdom I saw on, or defense I saw is, I'm glad they're doing the remix because it'd be like watching paint dry to see just like a shot for shot remake of The Walking Dead.
How do you feel about Game of Thrones as a viewer?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think especially the first five seasons when they really had the books to follow, they were great. They were awesome. Yeah. Lord of the Rings, same way. Like, uh-huh. I mean, that to me is just such counter to my personal experience as a fan.
I mean, there's a thrill to be had in seeing how someone imagines the thing that you are familiar with.
Yeah.
And seeing how closely it lines up with what you imagine.
Right.
And I think there's an opportunity for disappointment there, but there's also an opportunity for fulfillment.
Yeah, for someone to be like, wow, that was even better than I imagined. Yeah. I can't believe they cast, like, you know, when you see Ian McKellen as Gandalf for the first time, you're like, well, fuck, damn, there goes, you know, maybe my Gandalf had a bigger nose, but it's right. hard to argue that that's not Gandalf. Like, the thing is, like, do you remember the visceral pleasure you got when you heard that Jeffrey Dean Meatloaf was going to be Negan? You're like, oh my god, he was so good as the comedian. Yeah, this is going to be like, there is excitement and wonder at seeing something in your imagination spring to life competently in front of you. And for people that would prefer this to a faithful recreation of the other,
And I think if you're gonna try to remix something, you need to have a clear understanding of exactly why you're doing it.
Right. It can't just be because for change's sake.
Right. It's what Game of Thrones has done so well. They've said, okay, in this television show, we have to change some things to streamline them.
Mm-hmm.
How are we gonna do that in smart ways? The Walking Dead has never done that in smart ways.
Right.
They simply change things in order to mix it up to surprise people, and that. Absent the real reasons that you remix things, that doesn't satisfy anybody.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah, there's also that, like, because it does feel like Gimple also maybe goes to a lot of seminars for showrunning or reads a lot of books for showrunning, because it's kind of like if you've ever been in like a bad job where the executives go to some kind of retreat and they come back and they learn that in Walmart all employees are called associates, and now they're going to call all the employees associates, and that's going to fix all the stupid fucking bullshit. Like,
and you ask them why, and they go, "That's what Walmart
does." Oh, because you know the employees will feel more invested in the person that comes. And it's like, well, it's a grim mockery. It's a grim mockery, yeah. and. I feel like that's when I hear Gimple say things like, oh, you know, I want to write ourselves in the corner because that's what Vince Gilligan does, or we're trying to do this because that's what whatever show that better show he's seen. It's just like, dude, you really got to walk before you run. And some of these flourishes, like the grimacing montage, the face montage, that's just shit you've seen in some black and white French film that you thought would look good in The Walking Dead, but you don't know how to do it.
Right.
And it's just stupid.
Agreed. All right, Chris says, it's all over the internet that Andrew Lincoln's contract is up after season 8 with the debacle about how they handled Carl's death. I wonder if Andrew is going to stick around much longer. God knows I wouldn't.
So the anti-case is easy to make, right? The reasons why he wouldn't come back are self-evident.
Oh, yeah.
And you can make them really easy. Are the reasons he would come back?
Money. Money could bring him back.
A pile of money.
Yeah. I mean, he's already making $500,000 an episode, reportedly, so bump that to maybe the highest salary anyone's ever made for doing a television show, and I could see it.
Yeah. Is there – because, like, I've also heard, and I kind of believe this, that the Walking Dead film family is kind of like a family, at least.
Yeah, the cast and the on-set crew.
They really enjoy each other's company, and it's an experience, and it's like, it does seem like it's fun to do the fan stuff and all that. Like, do you think that it can't, because if it's just about the money, I mean, Andrew Lincoln's professional, but like, I feel like anytime you do something just for the money, like, you already got a toxic process, it's going to get even worse.
Sure.
How much of the love, because, you know, he's getting older. He's given, you know, going on a decade to this show, just loving the people and the friends and the family you've got. And I've stayed in bad jobs because I liked employees before. I like my fellow employees. But how long can that motivate you?
Especially when you have your real family who lives in fucking London, mm-hmm, or wherever, mm-hmm, they live.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to go thousands of miles away for half the year to go film this thing.
Right, right.
That has to be problematic for him.
Yeah,
his,
I mean,
family life.
If he comes back and just doesn't renew his contract, then I think that actually says a lot about the direction of the show.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he sees that the writing's on the wrong. He's not having as much fun. He doesn't approve of the way they treated Chandler, and he's out.
You know who else they've got on contract? Or they must have on contract.
Who?
Chris Hardwick. And I've got an email from an anonymous friend of a friend of someone from The Talking Dead.
Oh, okay.
Since we talked about Chris Hardwick last week.
Solid.
And how we wish we could have a heart-to-heart with him and find out what his real thoughts are on The Talking Dead and how he copes. This anonymous friend of a friend says he's got an inside scoop.
This is completely unsubstantiated.
Feelings.
This is anonymous. There's no reason. This is something scrawled on the bathroom stall that Jim wrote down and brought in. I just want to completely be honest with what this is. All right.
Absolutely. I may have even made this up myself.
Okay.
You just don't know.
All right.
But I'm going to read it regardless because I think it's fun.
Okay.
Chris signed on way back after season one because he loved the show and the comics and thought it would only get better. He's apparently pissed with what they've done, especially the last two seasons, but he's just a generally very positive person, so he's always looking for the last rays of hope. Sometimes, though, even he can't see the good in the show. For example, when they did the bullshit cliffhanger about who got hit by Lucille, his reaction upon watching it was, oh no, how the fuck are we supposed to spin this? They get callers into the show, and they had a hard time screening for that episode, as they had to weed through a dozen plus callers to even get people who were neutral on the decision.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. And so it seems to me, when you keep self-selecting at the shallow end of the, mm-hmm, bell curve, that you're eventually just going to get morons.
I mean, blind devotees.
You're so outside the common experience of fandom that you just, like, there's something wrong. There's something wrong with the opinion that you're getting after you filter it out so many times.
It's certainly biased, yeah. I would say the same about our podcast, even.
Sure.
I mean, there's only so much you can do to avoid that, and we honestly don't try very hard to avoid it.
Right.
Just like The Talking Dead doesn't.
Right.
I like to think that we're more honest about it.
Yeah.
I
just say, it's like, we used to read more positive reviews. We tried to keep it fair and balanced, but...
But as they stopped coming in, I stopped reading them.
Right, yeah, you like, can't just make them up, right? Yeah.
No, and it's both because the show got bad and also our podcast does not necessarily cater to those ideas. Anyway, he goes on. He does a great job at locking it down for the show and keeping his contract and substantial paycheck intact, but he's not at all happy with where the show has gone. Hope this provides some insight. Love your stuff. Blah blah blah. Yeah. So take that with a massive truckload of salt. I don't know if any of that is true, but you know it kind of tracks. It honestly, it is the kind of thing that I could have made up just by watching Chris Hardwick.
I think you have. I think that's exactly what's happened.
yes, the anonymous person was Guy Ferrari. okay, let's move on to Jessica from Dallas. I know you both haven't officially decided, but it seems like you're leaning heavily towards not covering The Walking Dead anymore. Selfishly, I'd like you to continue because I love listening to you guys, but I can't blame you. The writers have committed the worst TV cardinal sin. They made the show boring. I've been a huge fan of the show for years and could overlook all the glaring flaws because I was still interested in seeing where it was going. But now the characters are unrecognizable and the plot doesn't seem to be going anywhere interesting. So why bother? In honor of this potentially being your last Walking Dead podcast, I thought it would be fun to end on a somewhat positive note. Here we go. What were your top three favorite episodes of The Walking Dead to watch or cover over the years? She says, my personal favorites were Seed, which is episode 301. A, which is 416, and Not Tomorrow Yet, 612. Oh, got one from season 6 in there. I came up with a few, and I'll do mine so you can have a little bit of time to think, because I kind of sprung this on you. I thought the pilot was excellent. The pilot was actually really gripping to me. Clear is one that we talk about as being awesome from time to time, and that's mostly due to Lenny James just being a beast in that episode. And I think for the last one, it would probably be like Rick killing Shane or Carol just fucking annihilating Terminus.
Damn it.
Like,
I was hoping you'd leave that one for me.
I mean, you... I'm naming like a lot of the good ones, and she named a few good ones too. So
I mean, if I'm just talking about how much fun when I look back and talk about it, and also how much I've, because I also like I've really changed as a person since I first started Walking Dead. I remember how scared I was at like Rick going through that dark staircase in the pilot.
Oh yeah,
because I had watched hardly any scary material, like horror films. Like I actively tried to avoid those because I didn't like the tension and kind of dread that they bred inside me. Nowadays, like after, you know, getting married to a woman who's kind of a horror hound, this shit doesn't even raise my blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So it's like, but I will remember like those early kind of ice water rolling down your spine kind of feelings that I got in season one. I really liked...
Well, that's the thing. The show has fundamentally changed, too. There are no moments like that anymore.
Yeah.
There's no suspense. All of the suspense is who's going to get the bat.
Right.
That's not horror. That's just keeping me in the dark for suspense reasons.
I'm thinking of the funny moments I had. Like, the gang inexplicably trying to use Glenn as bait to get a walker out of the well.
not a like brilliant flash.
That's not
writing,
even
but...
the 16th best plan that they could. But it's just like they came up with it. Like, well, it's a plan. Let's use it. Like the time that Andrea accidentally shot Daryl. Like the early times where like it was the odd kind of what the fuck moments that kind of like is the 10% rat shit ratio.
Right.
The season 3 finale when they realized that they were going to push the governor into a whole other season rather than just tell an already bloated...
He attacks and destroys the prison and then retreats.
Yeah. like, those, I guess, are the ones that really stick out. The Lori Fiesta episode. It was funny about that one is how much we look forward to it. And then the episode was actually really well written and kind of gut-wrenching and we felt bad about it.
And that scene with Carl and his mom, yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. So those are the things that I can think of, like, that just, those are ones that bubble to the top when I think about fun experiences of The Walking Dead.
I really liked the arc with Sophia. I thought was not amazing. And it was maybe played too long and stuff, but I thought the reveal of that was really, really good when she comes out of the barn.
Yeah. No, that was a good moment. And it led up to
kind of horrifying in the way that Walking Dead usually isn't.
And then Bernthal comes in with a full head of steam. What is this? What is this? He's just like beside himself. Can't believe someone's keeping these fucking things in the barn. And then,
like your dad finding your stash of weed when you're a kid,
right? Yeah. What is this?
The hell do you think you're doing?
And then the last one, and it's Sophia with that fucking rainbow shirt on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good you're stuff. Right. It is, you know, we it's not the first time or last time, we'll probably say, but it was a fundamentally different show then.
Yep. All right, Monster Mike says, first off, I want to start off by saying, I think you both have been way too harsh on The Walking Dead this half season. If you look past the plot holes, the plot devices, the awful writing, the horrible character building, the awful physics, the ungodly pacing, the utterly confusing editing and cuts, if you spend all your belief of everything that should actually happen normally in any TV... And normally things that should happen in storytelling, the show isn't bad. No, wait, it still is. I watched the season premiere, and since then I haven't watched it at all. I had hoped that with the all-out war arc, they could maybe get back to some of the glory with the show. Being such an iconic arc from the comics, I thought it would be hard for them to fuck this up. Yet they seem to have done so. They did what I thought they would do, which is extend all-out war to the next half season, so this is even further torture for the audience. After Carl's death, I've decided this show doesn't truly care for storytelling, their fans, or their cast. The move has shown that the showrunners and execs are giving a middle finger to not only Chandler Riggs, but to Kirkman as well. We all know Kirkman has always said this was about Carl, the whole story was, and this is the way to tell them both to fuck off.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That seems to be a common sentiment.
I try to find the other answer to these, what's happening here, but it does feel like this is a very calculated... AMC's like, we have no sacred cows. We will burn everything to the ground rather than pay you any more than we already are paying you. And if you fucking take it to the public, or if you try to get what's right and what's fair, then we're going to fucking end you and destroy something you love. And that's You know, honestly, that's very close to my former religion's attitude about things. And fuck that. Holding things you love hostage to keep you
Sure.
So, yeah, it's bad. It's bad. It's bad people making bad things at this point.
All right. Jason from Mobile, Alabama says, I truly enjoyed this show up until the cliffhanger ending season 6. Now I watch it just to see how much they screw up. From Trash People to Oceanside, it's all pointless. So a question, other than Guy Ferrari taking over, can we salvage anything and get to a point where it's back to the good years? Is it past the point of no return? And I would say Guy Ferrari is the concept that we came up with to right the ship. So absent Guy Ferrari, no, I think the show is done. Like, you need a fundamental changing of the guard here.
I don't know how you do it. I don't think the Walking Dead show that we began watching that Frank Darabont adapted is... And Frank Kirkman had a hand in pinning, is definitively dead with the death of Carl.
Yeah.
And there's no way to get any semblance of that back.
Right.
This is a Rubicon that cannot be uncrossed. You done marched your soldiers and your legions into Rome, and that's against the law, and the Republic's dead. So I think it's too late. I don't think Guy Ferrari could save it. Guy Ferrari could turn it into a second rate Z Nation.
For sure.
But the ability for it to have a heart and to have poignancy and to tell us interesting things about humanity through this lens of a zombie apocalypse, I think is gone forever.
All right. Mike from either Seattle or St. Louis. He just said STL.
That's St. Louis.
It could also Seattle.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
He
didn't put any spaces in there or anything, so I don't know.
Let's see. Let's let Google win it. Google right. says St. STL. Louis is number one result.
Okay. There we go. Mike from St. Louis. He first of all says, at least you guys get to gray out another character on the pod's title pick. Yeah, I toyed around with graying out that character immediately after the episode, like for the finale.
I was kind of hoping you would.
But he's not dead yet. He's still around.
True.
He's still going to have lines. He's still going to make a big scene. So I gotta let him have his final episode at least.
I do think we should definitely, whenever he definitively dies, if we do nothing else, we should gray out that, and that's like a good place to leave the show logo.
Yeah. I should have made him like green or something. Like he's sick. I don't know. Anyway, Mike goes on. I think an element of The Walking Dead that kept it engaging from season one through the prison seasons were that main characters could die in any episode, not just limited to season finales or epic showdowns. Dale's death was great, as were Laurie and T-Dog's. Really?
Well, see, T-Dog was the
start.
He
went out like kind of heroic, but...
He was the start of the whole, like, we don't know a goddamn thing about this guy until he's ready to die. Oh, must be ready to die.
But I think, yeah, Laurie's death was great. Dale's death was great. Shane's even. All the random characters we met and thought for sure would be developed and then suddenly were shot or eaten. Sadly, I think that Game of Thrones suffers from the same extinction of world where we felt danger for our characters. In both of these shows, I've come to miss that visceral feeling of dread every week as it was replaced by a feeling of X more episodes left until we see what happens. That's interesting. I think a lot of writers, when they look at fiction, they say... A very similar thing. Like, all of these stories are afraid to kill their darlings, like kill these main characters, right? Mm. But then I look at stories that set out to do exactly that and say no one is safe at any time.
Yeah.
And I feel like that kind of kills your continuity of your story and the momentum that you have as a storyteller. And all of these stories eventually must come around to what was the central through line of this entire story.
Right.
And you can't kill everyone in that way because then you lose that.
Right.
So at some point, it just becomes like them telling a pretty standard story. Yeah. Even like, if it started off as, ooh, anyone could die at any moment.
Unless it's some kind of weird Faulkner stream of consciousness style Sound and the Fury, you have to have characters that eventually rise to the top and do something decisive to bring about a climax and resolution, or else it's just, you know, you're telling, the only way you can get away with that is if you tell a very serialized anthology style format, because then you can kill everybody and then invent a set of new characters, and that's part of the growth and death and rebirth cycle of the show. But like, if you're telling a story, that's the thing. Like, people are like, Game of Thrones is boring because you know that the big people can't die now. Well, it's also literally the last half of the last season to go. So.
Right.
Play that out. Let's say something comes and wipes out the entire main cast of the Game of Thrones. Then what?
Yeah. Then the story ends, I guess? Is that satisfying to you?
Yeah. If everybody and evil is triumphant, that'll happen, but that's a tough one. Even in Braveheart, Mel Gibson got his guts ripped out, but Robert De Bruce still lived to, I guess, fight for. My history on that is all muddled, but you know.
And that was the end of the story, most crucially.
You knew that he had sparked a revolution that eventually led to the freedom of the Scottish people, but
right. And William Wallace is not going to die, you know, the first time a village is burned down,
right?
Because then there'd be no story to tell. That's the thing. We have to tell a story from a point of view, at least. And that necessitates having characters that live long enough to establish that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's a tough, if not impossible, thing to do. Anyway, MacW says, you know, Gimbal might just be a spineless jellyfish. I keep asking myself, why in the hell, after Fear the Walking Dead finally having a notable season, would they end the showrunner... send the showrunner over who is causing the show to hemorrhage viewers on The Walking Dead. My conclusion is that Gimple must be the biggest apple polishing yes boy they can find. Perhaps anyone with creative talent are confrontational and want freedom. The AMC executives must hate that, but they must love Gimple, who must just make everything an easy ride for him. So my hunch is whoever pulled off that decent season on Fear must have been pushing against the grain to get that season made. So AMC firing done and brought over the jellyfish. I kind of like the jellyfish as a nickname for Gimple, but it's such a confusing thing to me.
It made me think of him, you know, the episode of Rick and Morty where Jerry and Beth do couples counseling, the way Beth envisioned Jerry as this worm. I feel like that email's made me think of Gimple as the worm from that episode.
Yeah.
But anyway, continue.
I mean, that's the end of the email, but it got me thinking, why would they make this move? Because it's not like Gimple has brought The Walking Dead to new heights.
No.
From any perspective. It's not a storytelling perspective, a viewership perspective, nothing. Why bring him over to a show?
Bring in the worm.
I just don't understand the thinking behind it in any way.
The worm's sleeping. You better get him up then. You're coming off of Fear the Walking Dead, not a rating success, but a kind of a sleeper critical darling. You fire that guy and bring in the person who has seen as the henchman on The Walking Dead. I feel like it's kind of the same thing that I think NFL fans are struggling with. Why are we not liking the NFL as much as we used to, and how much of it is the commissioner being a complete fucking in the pocket of the owner, doesn't care about the fans, doesn't care about the players, stooge. You know, we are fan satisfaction is at an all-time high, and yet this guy keeps getting record bonuses and renewals. So he's making somebody happy. Who is he making happy? The owners. Ah, I see the problem here.
But the owners should not be happy here because there are no all-time highs anymore. We've seen under the supervision of Gimple, The Walking Dead, one of the biggest shows on television, has lost 50% of its audience.
But are they making record profits?
50% of its audience.
They slashed the budget, and that's what I'm saying.
But he's killing the golden goose is the problem. You're getting eggs, but for how long? And now you're going to bring him onto your other show so he can kill that golden goose as well?
Yeah, American.
That isn't even a golden goose. It's a copper goose.
Yeah, no, it's totally short-sighted, but it's that.
I just simply don't understand.
You know, that parable about the wise old men plant trees, the shade of which they'll never see. You know, sometimes you got to do things the long, slow way because it's better in the long run, and that's just anathema to these fuckers because they – that's the thing. That always came to a head because I remember. Do you remember how much controversy there was about how Breaking Bad and Mad Men was stealing money from The Walking Dead? Because do you remember that? Matthew Weiner and Vince Gilligan renegotiated contracts and the Breaking Bad stuff all at the same time. And then it's you know, it's hard to make a good zombie film when Breaking Bad and Mad Men are sucking up all the profits. And then, you see these behind-the-scenes court cases, and it was just AMC doing it all alone.
Right.
I think a lot of this stuff is, yeah, you can't conceive that they're doing something so stupid and so short-sighted and selfish, and yet we have gotten firsthand knowledge that that's exactly what they're doing. And I think a lot of the fan reaction was, fucking Darabont's an asshole. You know?
Who does this guy think he is,
like, throwing directors who are and have no idea what they're doing off the set? Like,
right.
And then you see what a mess the first episode of season two was, and you're like, no, he was right to be offended and angry that they sent this guy in.
Yeah.
I
mean, maybe it is just a case of milking this cow to death, essentially. Because when I think about it, okay, we're in season eight of this show, and they've always maintained, oh, we want this to be a 20 season show,
mm-hmm.
right? We want this to go on forever, longer than I don't know, the longest soap opera you can think of, Days
right.
of Our Lives.
We
sure.
wanted to beat the Simpsons,
right? But that seems, in my mind, that is becoming clearer and clearer as a lie, just a straight up fabrication. What they wanted you to do is believe that that was the trajectory, and they were essentially going to milk it for as long as you would believe that and stay tuned in.
Yeah.
Because that is the only explanation I can think of. That still doesn't explain why bring Gimple over to another show that is already not doing well, because there's nothing to milk there. But
maybe Erickson, I think, is the showrunner's name. Maybe he's like, hey, look, I'm getting press and people are liking this. I need more money, or I need to hire this guy. And they're like, oh, you need? Well, you need to find a new job.
Right. That's what Mac's saying. Yeah. He might just not be a jellyfish.
Yep.
They need a jellyfish.
Yep.
All right, John from Milwaukee says, still enjoying your show, even though I'm struggling through The Walking Dead. As the series suffered in Season 7, I was still enjoying the story and some of the characters, despite the lack of quality. To put it simply, Season 8A has become impossible to enjoy. All the issues you discuss have finally hit a tipping point in which I don't like what I'm watching. Like Aaron, I was really engaged by the idea that this evolves into Carl's story, and now that concept is dead. He's got a couple of things here. Besides that fact, I'm pissed Carl is dead. It pisses me off more that they fucked with us viewers by teasing and foreshadowing throughout the season that this would be Carl's story of leadership. Which he's kind of right. And even in that episode, they were doing that.
This is my show, you said.
Yeah, which I think they were going for, like,
I tell you,
the old switcheroo, which might have been effective if they had done it better.
Yeah. I mean, that's you could say that about so many things on the show.
I know.
Like, that's the thing. Like, some of this artsy fartsy shit's not bad in itself. It's just, it's bad if you can't pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like rap is a perfectly valid art form when your middle aged white principal does it in a drug convocation. And at the drug convocation, it's an abomination. That doesn't mean rapping was a bad idea.
When Balky does it, nobody wants it.
It just means that maybe your vice principal shouldn't be rapping.
Yeah.
Okay. And man, and with how everything went in social media and how all the rumors went around, like those Carl saying, "It's my show. You said it was my show. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have to do things my way." And then him getting bit and died, like, that's too good, right? Oh, it's your show? No, it's not. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, everyone said it was your, but everyone said it was my show. Well, too bad. AMC said no.
Yep. Marin Ann from Norway says, if they somehow decide that Carl needs to survive his zombie bite, which I suppose is a possibility given this writing crew, could the fact that he was once actually shot in the head play in? I think this is my favorite theory. My favorite theory I've heard to date on anything.
Okay.
I don't know the fine details of his wound, but I don't really understand how his brain was not damaged at all. And as you say in the season finale podcast, the only way to stop the zombieism is to destroy the brain. So we know that, and we know that Jenner has identified the portion of the brain that the zombie virus infects, right, mm-hmm. to reanimate people. So, mm-hmm. Also on the show, zombies are frequently taken out by a knife stabbing through their eyes. One would think that a gunshot might do the same trick, or also the doctor now has a bunch of practice from his treatment of Father Gabriel's infection, so maybe there's something there. But this is the thing that I love. Carl could potentially be missing the part of his brain that can zombify, so this virus might not be able to fully infect and kill him. What do you think about that?
I'd give it an A for effort.
I would give it a Z for Z Nation if they went that way.
I was just thinking, like, you know, Because what does more damage to The Walking Dead, the idea that you can survive a zombie bite, they're no longer instantly fatal, or killing off the successor to the storyline of The Walking Dead?
Right.
Like, it's kind of, and I get it, like, if it's like just one of a, once in a lifetime, like, you're missing the prefrontal cortex node B that's behind the one's right eye, like, but no, I just think that, like, when it comes to gunshots, really look at a skull and where the brain is at in that skull, and realize that aiming a bullet at your temple is most likely just going to blow your eyeballs and sinuses out and leave your brain intact.
Yeah.
Lots of people survived self-inflicted gunshot wounds like that and just made themselves into really unfortunate Metallica video versions of themselves. So, like, I think that's what happened. Like, it just went out one side and blew out, and it didn't even touch his brain. But, no, that's the thing, like, that kind of plot line to do and not do damage to your overall arc is like, you're a brain surgeon level of writing, right?
Mm.
Is The Walking Dead writing room staffed with brain surgeons?
No.
I don't think so. So, like, that would take a lot of finesse and vision and panache to pull off, and they have none of those things.
For sure. Okay, Hannah from D.C. says, I have a coworker who is convinced, and I don't believe for a second this is your coworker, Hannah. I got this friend who wants to get something out of their butt. I have a coworker who's convinced that nothing will happen to Carl as a result of his Walker bite. My friend's reasoning comes from the first/second seasons. Dr. Jenner tells Rick, and then Rick tells the others, we're all infected. If the survivors have the disease already, how does getting bit make a difference? It's like someone injecting with you the flu, but you already have the flu. Thoughts?
Oh, that's a good...
Yeah, so, I mean, this is something we've talked about a long time ago when this issue came up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much like the bite itself that kills you, but like the infection surrounding the bite, because we're talking about like rotting corpses. And you look at like what happened to Gabriel this season, right? That's something that we both said, hey, this has no precedent in the Walking Dead universe, but also makes total real world sense, because any kind of open cuts you have or anything, you get that rotting flesh material in there, and it will infect you and potentially kill you in a world with very little medicine.
Yeah.
Or health treatments of any kind. So it's not about like, oh, we're like the zombie bite is infecting us with the zombie thing. It's just infecting them in general.
Right.
And killing them, and then that allows the zombie infection to take over their body.
Exactly. Yeah, that's always how I understood it too.
Yeah. But that is not to say that nothing will happen to Carl as a result of the Walker bite. He will still, if precedent is to be believed, die from this bite.
Yeah, he should.
For all the reasons.
Because that's the thing, is like there's two zombie viruses, I guess. There's a zombie virus that's in everyone that you will die. Any death that does not result in trauma to the brain, you become a zombie, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the, I guess, new to science zombie bite virus that's just like a very bad staph infection that is like antibiotic resistant. You can't cure like a zombie bite because it's just so fucking septic and it doesn't respond to antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what makes you a zombie. That just kills you.
Right. And then that zombie virus that's already in you takes over and reambulates you.
Right, right. Hey, this week's wrap-up podcast is sponsored by Sonos, who are the maker of just a really awesome wireless sound speaker system. You can do it to provide whole house audio for like music and dinner parties and just general listening to podcasts. It also does that. Or you can set them up to do a wireless 5.1 sound on your TV. It's the world is your oyster.
Or better yet, you could do both.
Or you can
like
do both.
Like I did. Yeah.
And it's pretty awesome. Like I've been using a lot, you know, we've been shifting into more of a downtime mode. And so it's been lots of like lazy mornings making breakfast. And it's really cool to watch like a Twitch stream in the living room. But I got my Sonos speaker in the kitchen. It's pumping the sound in there. So I don't have to like shake the whole house. It's been great for parties and stuff. It's been great for, I've been doing some basement projects and I've been listening to podcasts over my Sonos speaker.
Also, you got the Christmas cooking marathon coming up,
right?
And I know you are not going to want to have a hand free to try and control.
Well,
your
I might
phone.
Want to have. I desperately want
to. You
hand
will
free,
not have a
but
hand
I got,
free.
But I got one up a turkey and the other base in a ham. What am I going to do?
Right. That's where Sonos One comes
what
in.
What am I going to do when I got Christmas music playing and it's rocking like up tempo Christmas and then suddenly someone comes in with "Mary, Did You Know"? That nothing can kill a Christmas party faster than "Mary, Did You Know," and I got to switch track. I got my hand up a turkey, bass in a ham. What do I do, Jim?
You hopefully have already pre-purchased a Sonos One, and you have that in your kitchen because then you can just speak to your – you can use Alexa to say, "Hey, play the next song. Skip track.
Right.
Please, for the love of God and baby Jesus, skip track."
Yeah.
Without freeing up any
hands.
Oh,
it's Paul McCartney's "Wonderful Christmas Time." Oh, my God, next track. And you just keep doing it until you get back to the good stuff.
Absolutely. Makes it super easy and super convenient to control a lot more than just your music.
It
has, like, home automation features and all kinds. Anything you can do with the Amazon Alexa service.
It's so, like, you will find awesome uses for it. Like, you might be in the shower and you want to fast forward to turn up the volume a little bit. It's a game changer. Being able to to audibly control your speaker system, and you can do it for so much more. It can tell you movie times. It can tell you. It can order stuff off Amazon. It can tell you if you need a coat when you're going out.
I found out you can use it as an intercom to talk between, like, say, a basement, and a different part of your house. Yeah.
Wow.
Kind of sweet, honestly.
How does that? I'm curious. How do you do that?
I haven't tried it, but apparently CheapyD from the CADcast has.
Ah,
and he loves it. So.
All right. Well, now I got a new way to harass my family.
Right.
Never have to leave the couch again. If you never want to leave the couch again, you want to get an awesome deal, Sonos has got a special for our listeners. Jim, tell them about it.
Yeah, right now they're offering the listeners of The Watching Dead 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. You can't combine this offer with other discounts or promotions, but it's for a limited time only, so act soon. And if you want to do that, you can use the promo code WATCHING10, it's capital WATCHING10, at Sonos.com to receive this offer. Okay, let's get to the actual best argument I've heard for Carl not dying. And Tom was the first one to write in. There were many people who did, so thanks to everyone. But Tom in PA, Pennsylvania, says, "I hope you get a chance to read this before the wrap-up podcast, because I'd love to hear your thoughts on the matter. I'll preface by saying, I think the two of you are more than likely correct. Carl is a goner, and this is a power move by the AMC execs in response to contractual bickering in the past. But the general guideline on this show has been that people don't die from Walker bites. I don't know how people can say that. People already carrying the Walker gene trait. Instead, people die from the infection associated with having rotting, decaying matter entering an open wound."
Okay, that's what we just said. Yeah.
Yes, which to me says they do die from zombie bites, but okay. Reasonable enough. In a post-apocalyptic world lacking in doctors to clean and close those wounds and medicines to fight the infection, people pass away, reincarnating after as a walker. Taking that logic just a small step forward, Father Gabriel is currently fighting just such an infection. While he did not get bit, he did seemingly have rotting, decaying matter enter an open wound when he wore the walker guts disguise. Thus, one could expect him to pass away, reincarnate, yada, yada, yada. Except he hasn't, and he is not. Surely, sure, he's still in bad shape, but the symptoms no longer seem to be progressing. Is it possible that they are setting up a scenario where the former Hilltop Sanctuary doctor successfully put together a combination of herbs and spices, for lack of a better term,
to
combat the infection?" Yes, this
herbal medicine.
"If so, the remedy has conveniently been discovered just in the nick of time for Carl to be saved in the biggest hoodwink of all time. This, of course, could carry a whole slew of disturbing ramifications. It would be another instance of the repeated disrespect shown towards fans in the story. More importantly, though, it would completely downgrade the zombie threat in the world as a whole."
That's what I'm saying. What does more damage in the long run?
This is disgusting to me. This makes me viscerally upset because I think this is where they're going. I honestly, at this point, think, what other purpose does Gabriel, if you think about, okay, Gabriel's talking about, I need to find my purpose, right? Like, how do I give my life in a meaningful way? And he's continually been saved over and over and over again. This could actually be it. This could be the thing right here. And I feel like the writers are setting this up.
You're right.
Why else have Gabriel get sick in this moment?
So,
why feature it so heavily?
So why does this make you angry? Because you think it's his horseshit?
Because,
like, at what point, like, because I don't want to fall in the trap of...
Yes, because I think this is Glenn Dumpster 2.0 all to the nth degree. I think this is entirely, completely fucked up if they if they go again with this idea of someone is definitely dead by all the rules of the universe, and then we're going to miraculously save them.
Yeah. I mean, the only...
They learned nothing, and it pisses me off.
The only difference would be... This would be Glenn Dumpster with the potential to completely change the laws of the universe.
Sure.
Which, again, like, that's the thing. Like, I feel like the difficulty of pulling something like that off without it feeling like a fan jerk is so high that it's not worth thinking about. Like, what if Scott Gimple nails the landing on this thing and this transforms the nature of the universe and they fully hand it off to Chance? I don't know. Like, certainly, like, Carl not dying next season, this next half season, would change how I feel about the show going forward, but also... them pulling the rug out from under our feet one more time to get us talking about it. Yeah, I just don't see how I can trust them to round that corner and still be engaged in the story.
Right. It's offensive from a naked manipulation perspective. It's also offensive from... So think about what would have to happen here for things to transpire the way they have so far and for Carl to live. They would have to keep secret, at the very least, from Chandler Riggs' father, that they are going to kill off, that they're not actually going to kill off Carl. And barring that, you have to say, okay, they are so trying to manipulate their audience that they're having people's families, actors' families, lie openly about what's going
to
happen.
That's
here.
The thing. I kind of admire that part, like the commitment to in this day to like. Keep that spoiler a lot like a hidden,
but
or...
that's not hiding it. That's completely blatantly going the other way and saying no, we're absolutely not doing this, when in fact they are.
Yeah,
to me that's fundamentally more offensive than no comment.
Yeah, I mean, like, my nature wants me to play the devil as advocate, but I just can't. I just because, again, this would be an extremely high stakes controversial move in a successful show. This is not a successful show that has been able to maturely churn through problematic aspects of its storytelling. So,
and it's a show that has made this mistake before and should understand that the audience reflexively is going to have a negative reaction.
Right. That's the thing that, like, you can't go into it. And I'm trying to, like, okay, well, in a vacuum, but I can't go into it as a vacuum.
No, definitely not.
So, yeah.
So it's scary to me, and that's why it makes me angry, because it almost seems plausible.
Right.
That they could be doing this, but then all the other factors around it make it so disgusting to me that I start to get angry.
Yeah. Yeah.
All over a show I no longer give a shit about. Like, let's be clear.
Yeah. It's like almost like now you're just looking to see, like, when that final 10% will turn.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, is there a segment of the audience that prefers 100% rat shit? Like,
maybe.
You know what? Everyone talks about rat shit, but say what you want.
They're contrarians, yeah.
Say what you want. I like the mouthfeel of good rat shit. It's not about the taste, y'all. It's about the texture and the consistency. Like, maybe they'll come out of the woodwork and they'll inherit r/The Walking Dead. But I think I'm out on that. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Kim G says, does Gimple ever worry that he's made a shitty decision? Could his decision to kill Carl have been the reason Kirkman is no longer an EP? Did they have a falling out over this? Is his ego out of control? Does he resent Kirkman's popularity? Could killing Carl have been a ploy to try to retain Andrew Lincoln, promising him an entirely new story? What does The Walking Dead look like without Rick and Carl? So many questions. None of which I'm qualified to answer, but I thought they were interesting questions.
It honestly looks like a spinoff show. Like, I feel like that they've made their own show a fucking spinoff. What do you do about that?
Yeah. I don't know. And she concludes by saying, if Carl dies, Gimple didn't just kill Carl. He quite possibly killed the show.
Yeah. No, I think it's going to be impossible to erase that at this point.
I don't know. Josh has a good idea here. Tongue embedded firmly in cheek. With Carl dead, what are your thoughts on the possibility of Judith taking his place as the new leader of the apocalypse? She wouldn't have the same history as Carl's character, but it would be interesting to view things through the eyes of a female protagonist born after the events of the zombie apocalypse. This would also allow them to time jump and start fresh with a new cast member, if that's what they're going to do.
I mean, it's the whole they don't have the history, right? Like, yeah. I don't know in what universe throwing away 8 years of characterization and history is a good thing.
In a universe where that characterization has been bad, but I don't know that it's been necessarily that part of the show has not been terrible.
Like I said, like, I mean, are we having a spoiler section? Because okay. Mm-hmm. I'll save most of my comments because again, it'll be me mourning for things I don't think are going to be around. But like, if that's what you want to do, there's other ways to do it without gutting the original premise of the story, that's like, if you think Kirkman, I don't think The Walking Dead is like the great American novel. Okay. Mm. But it's a pretty good series of graphic novels. It's a pretty good zombie tale. And it was like very groundbreaking for its time. And it was probably worthy of being made into a big budget show. But what Gimple has done to it is like, it's very much like a late 80s video game movie.
Okay.
Like, yeah. You're calling it Mario and Luigi and that's a Koopa Troopa, but fuck you and everything about this movie.
Yeah.
And that's how I've gotten kind of with the show.
All right. Laura P says, I checked out The Talking Dead after episode 808, mainly to see if Chris Hardwick broke character. Spoiler, he didn't. A few things stood out to me. One, that is Chandler Riggs is going to be on Talking Dead after the mid-season premiere, which is supposedly his last episode ever.
Whoa. Fire.
She says, I wonder if he will go off script and give us any insight into the clusterfuck of the season and why they wrote him off. No.
I hope he doesn't.
No, don't. I mean, it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. They would rather cut to the technical difficulties screen than have Chandler Riggs go on a tirade about how they treated him on The Talking Dead.
And also, that's just very, that would be very, I mean, this kind of shit is why you got monsters like Harvey Weinstein, let it be known. But in Hollywood, you really don't want a reputation as a young man of being difficult to work with.
Yeah.
And do I think AMC executives and Gimple are the kind of people that would pettily make sure that is out and that you never work again? Yeah, I do. So for Chandler Riggs, not that I think he has a brilliant career ahead of him. To the extent that he has a career ahead of him, he should shut up, take his check, learn from this, and live well. It's the best revenge. Going out in a blaze of glory doesn't even really feel that good in the moment, and it's not going to get you anywhere in life.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. Second thing, they showed us some behind-the-scenes clips of filming the explosion scenes. Literally, multiple effects people said, we filmed this in one night. In fact, one repeated it and became emphatic. Now, maybe that's common. I'm not an expert on camera work, but wouldn't The Walking Dead want this to go well and give it as much filming as it needed? Literally, the effects people looked a little terrified that we have one night. Thought that was kind of funny.
I mean, I don't know, because that seems like that's certainly the rule rather than the exception. Like, I'm always amazed at how tight the schedules are on these TV shows.
Yeah, and I think especially when it comes to big effect shots, like when you're talking about pyrotechnics blowing up like one of a kind sets or something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You got one shot to get that right.
Right.
And tension is everywhere, from the pyrotechnics to the actors involved. If anybody fucks that scene up, that's kind of just how it appears on screen.
Yeah, and that's why you have to have pros. And that's why you can't like cheap out on it. But
right. And they do. I mean, their effects department, I think, are fairly professional. Yeah. Certainly their makeup department is, but I mean, the effects guys, the actual physical effects, I don't think have ever been truly awful.
No.
You know, they do typical movie stuff like gasoline bombs in cars and things like that when we're talking about high explosives and whatever. You got to kind of forgive some of that stuff. They're doing it for the camera, but yeah. All right. Mike B says, oh no, my enjoyment of your podcast surpassed my enjoyment of The Walking Dead quite some time ago. I'm bringing up a potentially sensitive subject. Andrew Lincoln overacts at a Nicolas Cage level. He has done the quivering chihuahua, sweaty-faced, vacant, teary-eyed look of an abject terror for so many lesser situations. What reaction could he possibly have that would be in proportion to this level of heartbreak? Have you seen some of Nicolas Cage's acting? You can definitely always go more over
the
top.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, someone hasn't seen Nick Cage losing his shit, which you should Google.
Right. That YouTube video is phenomenal.
Yeah, you're comparing Neil Armstrong to the guy who jumped out of a Red Bull balloon, okay?
Right.
Okay, let's settle down a little bit.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage plans to be in that department the first man on Mars.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I mean, and that might be where they're leaning into. It is like the mercy overcoming his wrath is going to be more of like trying to live his life as a tribute to his son that he no longer has to keep safe.
Hmm. Okay.
That sounds too good for this show.
The reaction to the bite was certainly reserved.
Yeah.
And it might just be the calm before the storm of pure Nicolas Cage
acting. I want to see him and Jadis working out their emotions through nude pottery.
Oh, God.
I just want to see him just sobbing
just
behind a
screaming
pottering wheel
and crying
as Jadis is behind him in her rubber apron and just guiding his hands.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what I want.
Turn in the cat.
Yeah, and then they'll do interpretive dance.
All right. Gary says, hey, everyone, a very interesting thought to ponder on. Wouldn't it be funny if they really want to take The Walking Dead in a different direction eventually, and they have an episode where Rick wakes up from his coma after the same amount of years later, and the whole series up to this point was merely him dreaming during his coma. Then shortly after Rick wakes up from his coma, he notices a TV news special report about people getting aggressive and trying to bite each other. And think of how differently they could take things, almost like a whole new series. But some of the people who Rick dreamed about were actually people he knew from his life before his coma. I think this is the first thing Guy Ferrari writes when he steps into the writer's room.
Yeah, this feels like...
Just got to reboot the whole thing.
What's that Tom Cruise movie about tomorrow?
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah. Sounds like Edge of Tomorrow, except for the coma is his, like, I now know everything I need to know about zombies and post-apocalyptic politics to succeed. Round two, ding, ding.
None of the same mistakes.
Yeah.
It's just indicative of the full reboot that this thing needs. Chris says, I have no strong opinion on whether or not Carl is going to die or miraculously survive. However, I think if they do try to make Carl the only person immune to the virus, it will be so they have a way to end the show down the line. It's long been established that they cannot do the whole it was a dream thing, even though not even Gimple is that awful. So the only other feasible way for the zombie outbreak to be solved is for them to somehow find a cure. And what better way than to start by experimenting on someone with an immunity? It would be the stupid out of the nowhere deus ex machina, but I'll deal with it if it means the show is coming to an end. I think the show is coming to an end one way or another.
Why do people think that the end has to be a cure of the zombie apocalypse? That seems like a common theme here, and I never thought that. I thought that we would end with the resumption of, like, this is just a new thing that we have to live with. Like, this is, human society discovering that they can get the flu for the first time and it can kill you. I mean, I don't know that you have to cure and have a return to normalcy.
Yeah, and that larger story being like the resiliency and the adaptability of humanity.
Yeah, like how does it, like, and that's, I've talked about this before, but not anytime recently, like how would human traditions change, like burial customs and religious customs, and like what impacts, far-reaching impacts would this have on human society, politically, economically, technologically, what are the hidden advantages that you might have by depopulating the Earth by 99% of its population? Like, those are interesting topics to me, which are still not being explored 8 years on.
Yeah.
And were being explored around this point in the comics.
And they seem to have zero interest in exploring that.
Right.
As one of our listeners says, I think D wrote in and said that this is essentially a soap opera. And that these characters have arcs that wrap back in on themselves. They become the good guy, or they don't even have arcs. They become the good guy when necessary and the bad guy when necessary.
So it's very similar to like wrestling.
Sure.
Which, people find fun and that's cool, but not me.
I'm not interested in wrestling, but
I'll watch The Wrestler.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. because that's a well-written, heartfelt tale about someone who participates in that. All right, final email from the non-spoiler section. Ben T. from the UK says, how did we get here? I mean, when you look at the journey that started 8 years ago and where it is today, and you look at yourself and go, I've wasted 8 years on this bullshit. And then we have the problem where you can't look away. It's like witnessing a car accident. You want to look away, but you can't keep your eyes off what is about to happen. That's how I feel about the show now. It's a bloody car wreck. And not just a fender bender, but a big fucking 3-hour tailback of a traffic accident, except instead of 3 hours, it's been 4 years. Imagine if you got paid to watch horrific car wrecks, because that's essentially what Bald Move is at this point. Anyway, rant over and to the real points. If we lived in an alternate universe where AMC didn't control the rights to produce and air this show, how many seasons would be satisfactory to tell this story, and who would be a good showrunner? I find that a hard question to answer because the comics or the graphic novels are still going. I don't know what the actual story is quite yet.
I can't answer that without going into the spoiler section because, sure. I've been informed by reading the comic books. So, mm-hmm. I do sometimes go back and wonder what this would be like if AMC came back this second season and said, holy shit, look how much money we made. Here is a 13-episode order for double the money that you had for the six. Instead of coming back and saying, here's 13-episode order and you get half the money that you got to make six.
Right.
Because you think about The Green Mile, you think about Shawshank Redemption, you think about, The Mist? That's the one that's got just that fucking wrong ending. Like,
yeah,
Darabont knows really how to work in this creepy kind of horror space, but with a heart that like says something about the human condition, and like what a fucking get that was.
You're right.
And
yeah.
and AMC just fucking shit canned it. So it's like, can't we just give Darabont another take? And like
you could.
And like run it up to All Out War, and then I will explain like where you could potentially, if the show was still a success after, and I think you could have gotten here in six seasons, then you've got a spinoff potential. Mm-hmm. That you could do after the All Out War thing is over. But yeah, it's like better directors. Like, why? I mean, we had an insanely talented director who was passionate about the thing and who probably would have taken it to new heights. And we didn't get that because of what is going to turn out to be a minor quibble with as big as this show got, with as mediocre as it's been.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, look at. You know, what is Game of Thrones getting like worldwide with piracy? Like 100 million people watching it?
Oh, that sounds like too much, but I don't know.
I think it's like, it wasn't getting like, didn't people say it was like getting 30 million like actual in the HBO ecosystem watches?
Could be.
I mean, I'm just saying like 17 million is cool and all, but it's like kind of like The Social Network. What's cooler than, you know, 100 million? What's cooler than 10 million? 100 million. Like,
yeah, and I don't know if you've noticed, no longer at 17 million.
And that's with like, and what if like, what if Kirkman died during the prison outline? Because that's essentially what the Game of Thrones has done. Like the author just stopped writing the show books in the middle of the series. So like they're just having to cobble something together. Mm-hmm. This is all self-inflicted on The Walking Dead.
Right.
So yeah.
He also wonders if we think another studio will ever pick up a project like The Walking Dead that will tell a story similar to the one that Darabont started.
Dude, this might be, if The Walking Dead gets canceled in a couple of years, this might be my new go-to, what do you think is ripe for a reboot?
Like a year after it's canceled. I know, it sounds ridiculous.
You do it on Cinemax, which mm-hmm. already has a working relationship with Kirkman. You give him a sweetheart deal where you bring in, I don't know, you can't probably get Darabont. He doesn't want to touch.
Here's who I want as the showrunner.
Guy
this
Ferrari.
Is going to be controversial.
Okay.
I want David Simon to come in and do a take on a zombie apocalypse. What would that look like?
It would be...
I know he would tell it from every single angle, right? And it would feel so natural, so matter as a fact, as if it were real time and place.
It would be a super virus as a result of people having unprotected sex with New York sex workers
right.
while high on WMD.
Uh-huh. No, but I can imagine
In the towers, in the project towers. That's how it would start. That's ground zero.
The perspectives that he would bring to it, and sort of the things he would use that to talk about.
I think you're wanting David Simon to do World War Z.
I want David Simon to reverse engineer his own stuff because he seems to work from like a place of, this is a thing I'm intensely interested in.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to tell the story of that time and place.
Right.
Whereas I think if he could reverse engineer that and say, I want to tell a story of a time and place that doesn't exist.
Right.
I kind of want to see what that looks like.
I don't know. I just don't think that's the thing. Like, I don't think he has any interest because
sure.
I mean, maybe if he could like George Romero this into something about, you know, systematic corruption in American politics.
Exactly.
Which, yeah, maybe you could.
I mean, there's a lot of stories about humanity to tell here.
Yes, yes.
Let's get Dan Carlin in there as the showrunner.
There you go. He can see, you're always bringing back to World War Z. Want someone to do World War Z right.
I do, goddammit. All right, that's it for the feedback that we had. We do have a spoiler section with several emails.
Yeah.
That we're going to talk about. A lot of people wrote in talking about like what they wanted us to do with the show. I will say that we are considering all options, but we have not made a decision. It's something we're probably going to talk about in January because that's when we decide all of our content for the upcoming year.
Yeah, it's got to be about our schedule and what we can do that would be more interesting or more fun than The Walking Dead.
I mean,
could we transform our coverage of The Walking Dead into something else? Like,
no, the only thing I can guarantee is there will be changes.
Mm-hmm.
In one way or another.
Right.
And that doesn't mean canceling the show necessarily, although it doesn't mean not canceling the show.
Right.
There will be changes. We will not be doing like full recap traditional podcast for this thing.
Like, if nothing else, the word Carl will appear in our podcast probably 90% less in the next season.
The word Carl?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, unless we're just saying reminiscing.
Right?
Like, remember the old days when Carl was alive?
Right. But I'd probably say Coral in that case, and it wouldn't actually be Carl. But, yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, you know, people have said, like, oh, you should keep doing the live watches. We might do that. Or you guys should just go back and do something more silly or skit-based. And we might. I just don't know. It's just, I like for this to be fun. I like for it to, and if I can have fun tearing apart the show, it's great. But I mean, and the other thing is, like, it's increasingly hard to make the entire fan base happy because I've gotten a lot of feedback where they don't like, some people like nothing more than 2 hours of us bitching and moaning and ripping the show. Some people can't take more than 5 minutes of that. And like, I just, for the first time, I don't think there's a way to modify it that everyone's going to be happy with.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, real villains here, AMC Studios. So we're just trying, you don't know what it's like out there. we're just trying to survive.
Yeah, we will adapt.
We find a new show, we claim it.
And I don't know what form that's going to take. But I guess stay tuned on the feed. There probably will be an announcement or, you know, if we decide to do the same old thing, we'll come back in February. But yeah, stay tuned on this feed. Stay subscribed, or if you're not subscribed already, get subscribed, and you'll have some updates coming into the new year.
All right.
Let's get to the spoiler section. For everybody who is not joining us for spoilers, why not? A, do you really care that much about what you're about to hear? And B, I guess we'll see you on the other side, whatever form that takes. So until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're back with the spoiler section. I got some emails that will probably springboard into conversations you want to talk about. So,
I mean, so my big idea would, like, I thought it'd been, I really think it'd be awesome for Darabont to have had free hand to tell a 6 or 7 season arc that gets us to All Out War. And then you could have taken a break there and retooled it and come back with the spinoff, which is the Carl show, where, you know, you bring back maybe You got to bring back Negan, because that's the thing. Post prison, it's about the relationship that forms between this like Charles Manson-esque figure of Negan in a cell and an impressionable Carl, and kind of the war for his soul, and like what does a post-apocalyptic leader, what is the John Connors of this universe look like? What does he need to look like? And I think that would be a fascinating show that you could tell, and then you could kind of maybe even go completely away from the comic book, but like just have. And the thing is it's not like Darabont stuck right to the comics. We had the Devatos, and we had the CDC plotline. So
Daryl
like,
Dixon.
They had the Daryl Dixon. There was already quite a bit of remixing. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like maybe that would have been its own problem, but we just never got to see the show long enough. And also, I wonder how much of that remixing was at the behest of the AMC, where they're like, "Oh, well, can you do this or can you do that?" Or and I don't want to get too far ahead. I just don't know. But my idea would then like 6 or 7 episodes. Very streamlined. All the bullshit we complain about out. Just tell the story. Get the all-out war, and then Frank goes away and gets his Emmys, and Andrew Lincoln gets a few, and we go on. The other thing I wanted to say that I didn't get to say last week because you know it was maybe it was too soon to speak ill of the dead. But Jason, famous nice guy Jason Cabisi, is it Cabisi? Jason C.
Yeah.
I'm famously bad at pronouncing last names, and Jason, you kind of got a doozy. It's just all a bunch of random I's and S's and C's in my head. I don't know that Chandler Riggs could tell that story. I don't know if he had the tools to tell. Because, like, at his best, he's okay.
I agree with that, unfortunately.
So, now, I don't believe for a second that the show made that decision based on that.
Yeah.
But, like, I could see a better run show where I trusted their competency just being like, I don't think this guy can carry the material. We're going to have to kill him off and do something different. Like, it's a real bummer, but he's just not going to be able to do it.
I mean, I feel like they had a valid out with the flash forward, though. And maybe they're not going to do the flash forward. I have no idea. But if they wanted to get him out, like one of our emailers said...
But that's the thing. It's like I feel like that the just flash forward should have been the point they should have been looking forward to, like reset everybody, because you just can't. You can't keep Andrew Lincoln. No. You can't keep Norman Reedus. You can't keep Lenny James under contract for 10 plus years. Laura Cohen. You just can't. So you should have like the fact,
I wonder if they've
the fact that you failed to plan for that is also a creative failure.
I'm starting to wonder if they've rethought the idea of doing a flash forward, because think about what that does, how disruptive that would be to the current fan base. I think if you go in and you say, okay, well, we can't get Andrew Lincoln back, and we probably can't afford to get Norman Reedus back, and we can't use Chandler Riggs for whatever reason, how disruptive would that be to an already shrinking audience, to an already 50% drop in audience?
It could also be like,
if you just said, fuck it, we're going to get rid of everybody that you already love, and we're going to bring them back as different actors.
I mean, there's precedent for that. Like that's part of like the marketing that you'd have to be like, well, this is like Star Trek. This is like James Bond. Like characters survive in a way that people can't because they don't age in real time.
I understand that, but think about the audience that is currently invested in this show.
No, that's what I'm saying. It would be
they're not invested for the narrative reasons and things like that. They're invested for their love of these characters, right? Mm. And if you completely change the faces of those characters and the personalities...
It's a challenge for sure.
But right, to an already shrinking audience. I wonder if they're even going to do the flash forward.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, no, I don't think they will. No, you're yeah, I'm... Because this is part of weeping for the show to won't be like, why would they? There's nothing but downsides in doing a flash forward now.
Right. I don't know, man.
But, like, that's the thing. Like, who is Negan? Like, to me, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is with a bullet point the death of the show that we were watching. It's a completely different. It's not an adaptation of The Walking Dead. It's inspired by the comic book The Walking Dead because that storyline is gone. Like, were they going to have Enid creep down into to Negan's cell?
That's our first email, yeah.
Yeah.
Jordan essentially asked that, like, where do they go now? with no more Carl? Are they going to try and replace him with Enid?
And Jeffrey Dean Morgan going to be a featured cast when he gets to spend 15 minutes from a cell every half season? Like,
right.
There was no real thought, because that's the thing. Like, I always thought, like, how are they going to bring this back to a place where they can tell the story? And for the first time, I've been slapped in the face. No, they're just not going to. They don't care. They're not planning this even next year out, let alone multiple years out.
Right.
And you're right. There probably won't be a fast forward, because that would be, for the people still watching the show, that would be another excuse to stop watching.
Right. And they've already got enough excuses for that. So let's go to the emails. Ryan, I talked about Jordan Inn's email a little bit, but Ryan says, I'm seeing some theories that Carl wasn't bitten by a walker, but was bit by a whisperer, which, for the spoiler people, they're a band of people who hides amongst the walkers wearing walker skin.
This is where I dipped out. So I know about the whispers, but I don't know how it eventually evolved.
Okay. And maybe this is their introduction into the show. A couple of things I don't like about it. Chandler Riggs already confirmed Carl's death and has even said there's no coming back from it unless he's lying. And B, in the comics, the whisperers don't bite people. They stab them to death. Just wanted to get your thoughts on this theory.
Those guys that were attacking looked like zombies.
Also, Carl looks very, very sick in that final
shot. He does.
Not like he was bit by some weird person wearing walker skin.
It's the opposite of placebo. It's a gazebo. It's when you take something you think is going to kill you, and your body starts saying, "Oh my God, it's over."
The gazebo effect.
The gazebo effect. Yeah. Right. You get bit by a fake zombie, and suddenly you start sweating and looking pale. And
yep. So John W. from Toledo has another.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, I feel like you're falling into a trap of thinking this is a better show.
Sure.
Like, you're thinking what a better show would do, what clever way to introduce these things, and you're playing chess, but unfortunately the rules of the game are still governed by the International Checkers Society.
Yeah, I remember, I don't know, I mean, the way they introduced, like, the wolves, right? They kind of, sort of did some stuff like that.
Yeah, and who can forget how riveting the wolf storyline was.
Right, with all the morgulizing and whatnot. Okay, John W. from Toledo says, hey, I've read a synopsis of all the comics and says the future of the TV show is done since Skimple decided to kill off Carl. He's currently still a prominent member of the community, but do you think now that Carl is gone in the TV show that Kirkman will kill him off in the comic?
Why?
Gimple claims that people are going to take over Carl's plot in the TV show, and I cannot seem to understand how that could possibly happen. I think this is John trying to desperately scramble for some world in which this makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And I don't think it's going to happen, man.
The other thing that he brought up that was more interesting, in my opinion, is also he says the group we're about to encounter are named the Commonwealth, and they look like stormtroopers based on the cover of issue 175. It's rumored that they are way more technologically advanced than everybody else, and that is who I'm speculating has the helicopter that we continue to see throughout the TV show. I don't know anything about the Commonwealth, do you?
Was that in the video game?
I don't know. What you mean?
Were those the guys that had the
Telltale
the 76
games,
like branded on them, maybe?
Oh. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that has anything to do with the Walking Dead story in general.
Yeah, no, I don't either. And again, I don't recognize that plot, so I wouldn't have much to say.
Okay.
I guess now that's the other good thing, is I can finally catch up on The Walking Dead to see if the comic book is still entertaining.
Yeah.
I've been putting that off because it's like keeping up with The Walking Dead was doing nothing good for my enjoyment of the show.
Right. But that's about all we got as far as spoilers go. We had another one from Tyler M, but he's talking about the Whispers, which we kind of already went over.
Okay.
So thanks to everybody who sent in emails. I got hundreds. I had like 40 pages of emails.
I hope we're not doing our own little Glenn dumpster fire. Like, this will we, won't we is purely because, like, January is when we debate, we do all of our kind of like creative decisions for the new year. And
right.
It really does depend on what the competition is and what's going on at the schedule. And
the difference here being we've kept you informed of the entire process.
Like, yeah,
we're not trying to hide the fact that our show is still alive under the covers here, under the dumpster.
Right.
There's no Glenn dumpster here to be had. It's simply a matter of we don't know what we're going to do yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, it's a real, you know, it's that's the thing is like, and our hands aren't being forced. It's like, I don't want to like, this is, it's, I always struggle with choices. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's no
independence has its benefits and drawbacks.
Yeah, like I'm used to getting forced to do things. Like Amazon right. cancels our sub membership or like our thing, so we have to do this. Or like this is just purely like the show is calling our bluff and getting to a level of quality where it seems like we should stop.
Right.
But half the fans want us to and half the fans don't, and it's still making decent, like they're selling ads on it. Like it's very, very confusing and complicated.
Yeah. And it's genuinely up in the air for us. We're not sure what we're doing yet.
Yep. But sorry we can't give you any more to go to than that. We will be back next year with lots of great shows. Mm-hmm. Lots of unambiguously great shows. Better Call Saul's coming back, Westworld's coming back.
Yep.
There are tons of shows that I'm genuinely excited about. Mr. Robot just concluded. I mean, talking about a show that writes the ship, like mm-hmm. season two is really shaky, and Jim and I were thinking, like, oh man, we really might not have room for it on our schedule. We decided to cover it, and season three is one of the best comeback seasons of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And is going to probably be top three, top four on my Baldies list, which, by the way, is another thing we're coming back with. So there's lots of stuff that we're doing, lots of movies we're watching, lots of stuff. If you only know us for our Walking Dead coverage, please, oh my God, please, go to baldmove.com and check out literally anything else that we're doing.
Everything else we actually enjoy watching. So.
Yeah, this is us. This is the equivalent of us biting the heads off of chickens.
Yeah,
this is just a circus sideshow act at this point. Don't judge us because we're bizarrely paid to bite heads off chickens. It's not our fault. Baldmove.com.
Yep. I think that's it. We'll see you guys when we see you.
We'll see you when and where we see you. Later.